Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and we're in the studio. Dr. Mixon has the weekend off. Dr. Samira Umat is here. I'm Lynette. And on the phone, we have David from Kamano Island. Okay, David. Let's talk.
Hello, David. So thank you for your call. Remind me again, David, how old are you?
I am 80 years old.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your timeline. When were you first diagnosed with prostate cancer?
4 years ago, I regularly do a PSA test. Uh-huh. And I've had... some genetics, and I was not supposed to increase, but suddenly my PSA shot to 22, and they went in and explored and found two spots that needed to be taken care of. So they immediately gave me two shots of some drug that turns off my prostate, because my physician said the prostate was feeding the cancer.
Right.
And so, and that was 4 years ago, and I've had x-ray and seeds, and for the last 3 years, my PSA test is less than 0.1.
Okay.
So... I I am overweight. I've gained a bunch of weight. I need something to get me moving again.
Gotcha. So the androgen deprivation therapy is now discontinued, right? You haven't had it after the initial two shots. They just gave you some radiation therapy afterwards, right?
Yes, and seeds.
The internal radiation.
And seeds, yeah.
Right. And you don't have any metastatic disease.
I'm not sure what metastatic means.
Okay. So metastatic means if it's spread outside of the prostate and if it is anywhere else. You don't. And they have checked you for that, right?
They have done to the best of their ability, yes.
Okay, good. So, you know, when prostate cancer is first diagnosed, and depending upon what the Gleason score of prostate cancer is, which is basically a score to tell them whether it is contained in the prostate gland, whether it has spread to the capsule of the prostate gland, and or if it has gone outside of the capsule, and then does it affect the lymph nodes or not. That scoring system is very important to help guide treatment. And usually they save androgen deprivation therapy only if that score is very high. Because we recognize that androgen deprivation therapy has whole body consequences for the patient. But yes, there is a school of thought, and if that score is very high, they do have to suppress all androgen function. If the Gleason score is low, then they don't have to do androgen deprivation therapy. In fact, in most patients, where the Gleason score is low, and when they do the genetic testing, that prostate cancer is so slow growing that it will never cause a problem in their lifetime. But in your case, it did, and you suddenly went from normal to 22, which is a very high value, with a biopsy confirming two lesions and possibly a high Gleason score, which means that there was metastatic change, turnover was very rapid, and it was an aggressive form of tumor, which is why, to prevent it from spreading, they basically depleted you of all testosterone in your body and then gave you some seed treatment, because in and of itself that androgen deprivation therapy is not going to be effective, and they need to add some second modality of treatment to it, and that helped control your tumor. But now, for 3 years after that treatment, you are cancer-free. You have had no spread of the disease, and you are feeling the impact of low testosterone. That's not uncommon. And if the original tumor was not that aggressive, we have patients that have continued their hormone replacement therapy with us afterwards. In fact, Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler's presentation 2 years ago at the Age Management Conference got a standing ovation, and he said that he's read, he didn't quite say it, but he said that the evidence was suggesting that in patients who have had prostate cancer, testosterone replacement therapy may prevent a recurrence of that cancer. Okay. Mm. Now, I don't know if your cancer, what type of cancer you had, how aggressive it was, and whether that is not the case for you or not. It might be that you are not a good candidate, but you have to address this with your urologist to find out whether you would qualify or not. Most physicians agree that patients can go back on testosterone therapy after their treatment with prostate cancer, especially 3 years later if their PSA is normal. But you have to clear this with oncology and urology on a one-on-one basis. I think you should present them with your symptoms, which you have clearly stated and are very, very common, which is fatigue, no energy, no lethargy, no self-confidence. And these do impact on your quality of life. So I think there is a chance, but without knowing the original pathology report and without knowing what they found, I'm not in a position to give you a 100% answer. But definitely it is worth exploring with your oncologist to find out if you qualify. Do pull up Dr. Morgenthaler's papers. Do read them. So know a little bit about it yourself when you go in, so you can have an intelligent conversation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, sir, and I do wish you all the best. And David, do call us back afterwards and let us know what happened.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
Very good. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Samira Umat here in the studio. And this is the number to get through today. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We are headed to Bellevue right now with Beverly on the line. How can we help, Beverly? Good morning.
Hello.
Hi there, Beverly. We are here.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Beverly.
I'm
Yeah, let's have you turn your radio down so we can only hear your beautiful voice.
Let me grab that. Let me get
okay.
it. They're gone. Okay.
There we go.
I'm calling about SVT. I'd like to know what precipitates it starting and, you know, exactly what's going on.
Tell me again what that acronym stands for. What is SVT? Supraventricular tachycardia?
Yes.
Okay. Heart
so
related.
Another, it's a hard day for us. Okay. So, tell me a little bit about your story, Beverly.
Well, I am in excellent health, and, you know, I have a 6-point health maintenance program that I've developed, and I follow it 7 days a week, so I'm in outstanding health.
Good
but,
job.
Let's see. It must have been maybe 2010, I think, when I was out in the woods on a hiker, and all of a sudden I got this really bad tachycardia, and it just wouldn't go away. So I was way out the woods. I was miles from town. But anyway, but close enough that I could call 911. So they came out and got me and, you know, took me into the hospital, and they said that's what I had. And I just wondered what precipitates it. The only thing I can think is that since I was a very small child, you know, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or maybe less, I would get panic attacks. And that's really unusual for a tiny child, but the home I lived in was very difficult. And I had a very, very strict mother, and she didn't really want me. I mean, I had a family. I had a mother and a father, but they were like 180 degrees apart, so they were never too happy. And my mother was really strict. And so I think I just, you know, that's what set that off at a very young age. And they put me on some very strong tranquilizers, because in those days they didn't know what it was.
Okay.
And so off and on for years and years and years, I was put on tranquilizers.
Oh, wow.
And then finally, I think it was probably 1988 or something, I used to get my medical care at UW.
Okay.
And a doctor there recognized exactly what the problem was, and she put me on some sort of medication that helped. But then it would make my mouth so dry, that didn't work eventually, so I got off of it. So, but the panic attacks reduced over the years. A doctor one time told me that the older you get, the less likely you are to have them.
Right.
So I rarely have that anymore, but then I had this thing in 2010, and I don't know if those two things are related, but I wondered if it was, if that set it off, and I'm just trying to figure out, because every now and then I will get a repeat of that. I take it's called propranolol, I think.
Okay. Okay.
It's been assigned to take if I get one of those instances, but I just would like to know what's going on, and because I am a very avid, very high altitude solo backpacker. I like to do the best I can to take care of myself, because the wildlife are great, but they're not very good medics.
That's true. That's true. Okay, lots of great information there, Beverly. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be back to talk about this, SVT, supraventricular tachycardia. We're going to find out more about that, and so good on you for taking such good care of yourself. Beverly, can I get your age, too?
I'm 80.
Wonderful. Okay, stay right there. We will be back. And Bob, we're taking your call next. Jane will get to you as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here's the number to get through, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back after this break. Oh, Dr. Mixon picked this one. Boot scoot boogie. Yeah, he'd be boot scoot boogieing all over the studio here. Dr. Mixon is off this week. Dr. Samira, you, Matt, in the studio. My name is Lynette. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. We're talking with Beverly, an avid hiker who keeps herself in great shape. She's 80 years old and dealing with SVT.
So
I thought of something else. After I got home off from the hospital, they put me on metoprolol.
Yes.
But that really isn't very good for you. And
well,
so finally, I said, you know, can I get off of that? And
right.
So I did. And these instances I get with SVT are very infrequent.
Okay.
But nevertheless, you know, when I'm up there at 14,000 feet, I'm going, okay.
Exactly.
So I have some propranolol with me all the time, and it does work really well. It's okay. very quick and effective in, you know, getting rid of the problem.
Right,
but I'm just
right.
trying to find if there's anything yeah. new or some way I can suppress it or, you know,
sure,
make it safer to be up there at 14,000 feet.
I got it. First of all, I really admire you for being so active at, you know, at any mm. age, really. But good for you, given the fact that you have had supraventricular tachycardia for a while. Sounds like you've been suffering from some things for a while, too, with the anxiety. Now, supraventricular tachycardia, for those that don't know it, basically the heart has two chambers, the atria in the top, the ventricles at the bottom, and supraventricular just means the atria. It means higher than the ventricle. It's the atria, or it could be, you know, one of the nodes before the atria, so that's why they call it. It's not originating in the ventricles. It is originating higher up than the ventricles, hence the name supraventricular tachycardia. Ventricular tachycardia is dangerous. That means that you're in an emergent situation. That means that you're at risk for a heart attack because your rhythm is abnormal. You're not getting enough blood out of the heart, and it is a dangerous, urgent situation. So hence the distinction between ventricular tachycardia and supraventricular tachycardia. And ventricular tachycardia can become ventricular fibrillation, which is basically a heart attack. And so supraventricular tachycardia is less dangerous. And you're absolutely right. It does have triggers. So physical activity may actually diminish its frequency, but it can be triggered by, for example, caffeine, smoking, any sympathetic stimulation that accelerates the heart rate can cause you to go into this episode. And sometimes...
Oh, I can tell you something. One yeah. thing that I know will trigger it, I don't know why. If I bend over and put my head down rather than bend over and kind of have my head more horizontal.
Yeah.
If I put it down, it'll yeah. set that off immediately. And I'm thinking yeah. maybe something bending my neck or something going on. That is the only trigger I know I have, but it will do that every time.
Interesting. Yeah. So obviously, if you know that, you have to avoid it. You know that. Otherwise, you know, there is a maneuver that you can do. Actually, one of the easiest things you can do is, like, imagine you're having a bowel movement and you're constipated and you're straining to have a bowel movement. You can suppress the supraventricular tachycardia if you do that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I've never heard that one. I've been told a long time ago to put my legs straight up in the air and leave them up there for an extended period of time. But
no, increasing intra-abdominal, like if you start coughing, say you just start coughing or you hold your breath or you pretend you're like you're having a bowel movement and you're straining, that will suppress the supraventricular tachycardia very quickly.
Really? Just mm-hmm. holding your breath or coughing or...
Yeah. Yeah, or straining. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so try that. And then I do agree with you that the beta blocker, especially for you where you're an active, it can cause fatigue. It can slow the heart rate down, so it does do the job. But it will cause you to be tired, and where you want to be active and you have the energy, then that's, you know, impacting on your quality of life. So
yeah,
if you're not...
I don't want to be tired.
Yes, exactly. And mm-hmm. you've tried the medication and you said that it caused side effects and you want to come off of it. So monitor the frequency with which you get these episodes. If they're not too frequent, then you can use this maneuvers that I talked about. But don't let it get away. If it's interfering with you every day, every week, then you might want to think of some other options. So talk to your cardiologist. But you said you don't get them a lot.
It's usually very infrequent. Sometimes I'll get one and then just two or three days I'll get another. But then it'll be like, you know, weeks, you know.
Okay.
Overall, you know, over the course of the year, I don't get that many. So they're not really common.
Good.
My idea is just try to reduce as much as possible.
Right, exactly. And anything that stimulates it, you want to avoid. So caffeine can stimulate it. Alcohol can stimulate it. I don't know if you're a smoker. It doesn't sound like it, but I don't know. Smoking can stimulate it.
I don't drink.
Okay. Chocolate, soda.
I love chocolate, but it's very, very dark. I have super dark chocolate, you know, like 85% or something. Is that okay?
That I think should be fine.
She should get one vice.
Yes.
So chocolate occasionally. Good job, Beverly. That would be mine too.
It's really dark chocolate is supposed to be kind of good for you.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It has other benefits. All right, Beverly.
Okay. So, and do you know what caused this condition to start?
You know, there are some genetic causes, there are some triggers, and some people can just have it for no previous reason. Sometimes some medications can trigger it. Sometimes people have underlying lung disease or heart disease or mitral valve disease or thyroid disease that can trigger it.
Well, I don't have the diseases. I've been very, very lucky. I don't get diseases except since I've been a little kid, if I get a cold and you have it for like 3 days, I will have it for 3 weeks and it's very severe. I'll have like a violent sore throat for most of a week and then all these other, you know, symptoms. And it's just awful. But that's my disease.
Oh, wow.
When you get a cold, you do it big.
Okay. Well, keep your immune system strong. You know, as people get older, your immune system does weaken. So keep your immune system strong.
All right. Thank you for the call, Beverly. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We're going to take another call, get the question, and then take a quick break. Let's go to Quincy. We have Bob on the line. Thank you for your patience, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Bob.
That's okay. Good morning. I'm a longevity medical patient, too. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thank
you.
You're
very welcome. And
I have a niece that's in her late 40s. She went in to have her contact lenses fitted, and they were checking her eyes. They were afraid to dilate one eye because apparently there's some concern about the iris collapsing. I don't understand that. She has an appointment next week with a specialist, but I was hoping maybe you could give me any information on that so I know what's going on.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that is an interesting one, and one that I'm afraid I will have to say I don't know.
Wow. We might
about.
Have to put our bat signal up for Dr. Michael Gilbert.
Yes.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Gilbert did my RLE, too, so I'm
okay.
So
wonderful.
I missed him last week. Yep.
Yes, but we'll put the bat signal out. If he is in town, he's usually listening, and then maybe he can call in and talk more about this.
Well,
a collapsed
thank you for the
iris.
Prostate information too. I had a question about the prostate, though. This
sure.
You said 22 is high. Is that the PSA?
Yeah, that was his PSA. It was high, but he said that it went up suddenly, Bob. It went from normal to 22.
I have an army buddy that's got cancer in his prostate, and his PSA. They said his PSA was high, but he said it was only 7.
Uh huh. So 4 is the upper limit of normal, right? And then as we men age, with every decade of life, the risk for prostate cancer increases for men. And if you look long enough and hard enough, every older man will have some prostate cancer cells in his prostate gland. The question is, how quickly is it becoming malignant, and what is the rate at which it is growing? So they look for the PSA, and they look to see how quickly it is rising. And over the years, I've seen most urologists watch it unless it becomes 10 or higher. What we do in our clinic is we do recommend some investigations. So we will send them in for an MRI to see if there is something abnormal with that prostate gland. Remember, PSA can go up because of an infection and inflammation also. So you want to make sure you check it enough times, treat an infection. Hey, you're hearing the music. Let me go to this break, and then let me come back and talk about this a little bit more, okay?
Okay, stay with us, Bob. And Jane will be talking with you soon as well. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with Dr. Samira Umat, and here's our phone number to call in with your health concerns and your aging symptoms concerns. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Oh, I so totally remember this song way back when. Roller skating to this song. I'm not going to tell you how old I was, but I was on skates. Hi there. Good morning. I'm Lynette here along with Dr. Samira Umat answering your questions. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We have Bob from Quincy on the line. We've been talking about what's normal. Why does your PSA rise for prostate?
Right. So, Bob, I was saying that PSA is a marker, prostate-specific antigen, and an infection or an inflammation can also cause the PSA to go up. So if I see a PSA rising above 4 and is increasing gradually, I do ask about frequency symptoms, BPH, any irritation, any infection. And if necessary, you know, I will send off for a urinalysis to see whether they have an infection. And I have had some patients that do have an infection, and when treated with antibiotics, they do get better and the PSA drops down. And you do have to treat antibiotics for a longer period of time in a prostate infection, because it just takes longer. So treatment may be even for several weeks before you can start seeing that the PSA comes down. Now, if despite all that, and if there is no infection and if there is no inflammation, but the PSA is continuing to rise, then you do want to watch it carefully. There are a couple of suggestions I have. If you don't want to do a biopsy because a urologist will want to do that, you can ask for a 4K test. Medicare does pay for that now. And it's basically looking for 4 calcrine markers in the blood that gives a percentage of what likelihood of cancer there is in this marker, okay? So it'll tell you what is the risk for this being cancer for this patient, and it looks for certain markers. Okay, so we used to do that in our clinic too. Now Medicare pays for it. So before Medicare was paying for it, we were offering it through our clinic. So you can still get it through our clinic because you're a patient. But for your friend, you can ask him to ask his provider to do this. And if the provider cannot offer the 4K for any reason, you can ask them to do a free PSA value. They can easily do that. LabCorp does that. That blood sample goes to LabCorp, and they will tell you the percent-free PSA, and that is a risk for him for prostate cancer. Then you can decide what you want to do based on that percentage value. So my suggestion would be before you go for any biopsy, you should get an MRI scan of the prostate. So if the percent-free PSA is high, and if the likelihood of this being a cancer is present, then ask for a prostate MRI first. And many urologists are completely on board with this because you want the biopsies to be specifically targeted for any area where there is a lesion. So if they do a blind biopsy, and they will tell you, well, yeah, we're looking. Yes, they are, but they don't know on imaging where to look for. Okay, so they may completely miss it. So if they do find a lesion on imaging on an MRI, then they can go for a biopsy. And then, yes, it's, you know, you should probably do it by then because then there is something growing. The percent-free PSA was high, suggesting it's a malignancy or a cancer. And then you want to do the biopsy. You want to do a targeted biopsy at that time to get a Gleason score. And then you can plan further steps based on what that Gleason score is. It might be non-malignant. If it is not malignant, then obviously they're just going to watch. Okay.
He's with the VA. He's with the VA in North Carolina, and he's got excellent, excellent care from them. He had a Widowmaker bypass done, whatever, and had some skin cancer on his ears. He's a farmer, and the question I had was both him, their lifestyle. Both of those people are huge. They're just way overweight.
Okay.
And I'm just concerned about that too. That's, you know, Dr. Mixon talks about that all the time.
Yeah. You know that being our patient. So how old is your friend?
I think Bob's 75 and I'm 75 as well, going to be 76.
Okay.
We were in Vietnam about the same time Dr. Mixon was there.
Ah, I see. Okay. Well, thank you for your service. And, you know, the Carolinas are a beautiful place, but they must be scorching right now.
I think so. So is Quincy.
Yeah.
but it's arid. We're arid desert here. We're on the east side of the Cascades. The humid side is up on the Cascades towards the ocean and Puget Sound. So, but it's beautiful here. It's just quiet and peaceful.
Oh, nice. Nice. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, absolutely. You're so welcome. And tell him to go ahead and get the extra blood test. Now, sometimes, you know, they'll do a digital exam and they'll go, I don't feel any lesions. But that's really archaic now. Many urologists here don't even do it anymore. If they do it, fine. I'm not saying anything bad about it. But don't let that digital exam be the only reason why he doesn't get further blood testing. So if the PSA is rising, my first thing would be let's do another blood test. Let's rule out an infection. Let's treat an infection or inflammation if it is there. And then based on the PSA and percent-free PSA values, you plan your further and next management. Okay? Thank you and good luck to your friend.
Yes. Thank you for the call, Bob. We're heading now to Burlington, going a little north. We've been a little south. Now we're headed a little north to Jane. Good morning, Jane. Thank you for holding.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. I have a question. This has to do with AFib as well. I've had two issues when I've had to go to ER, and they have me on Eliquis now as well, and I've been on metoprolol for some time. But my question was, I'm concerned with the Eliquis especially, and I've read some about nattokinase. Do you know anything about that, and if that is, you know, would be appropriate to check with my cardiologist on?
Ah, such a great question. You know, I do have patients using nattokinase, and I do think that it works for them. But would your cardiologist be able to say that you can come off of the blood thinner and just use nattokinase? I think the answer to that is probably no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It, you know, people who use it and know what dosing to use and will it, you know, prevent the blood clot. Basically, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to reduce the risk for a stroke and the blood clot. And as a blood thinner, nattokinase has been used by many people, but I don't think that it is significant. There's significant evidence that you can avoid a blood thinner medication and use that and reduce the risk for stroke. So I think your cardiologist would probably not agree to that. But there's no harm in asking. I do have patients using it, but they use that on their own then.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I was concerned about that because I'm really not thrilled being on the Eliquis, but on the other hand, I don't really want a stroke either. I was into my general practitioner this week, and because I'm so tired all the time, I'm also on metoprolol, and I'd asked her if maybe I could lessen the dose. My cardiologist had upped that at one point. I'm on 25 milligram, or let's see, 25 milligrams on the metoprolol, and I take it 1.5 twice a day, and they thought maybe that, you know, my blood pressure is pretty much controlled, and last night it was like 111 over 61, and, you know, sometimes obviously it's higher, but, I thought, well, maybe I could go back to just one tablet twice a day instead of 1.5. So I have an appointment this next week. I thought I'd ask because I'm very fatigued and it's kind of frustrating.
I agree with you. Unfortunately, those medications do carry that side effect. And if it is medication related, then either you want a lower dose or you want to change the drug and try maybe a different medication in that same class and see if that may have a better outcome for you. But as a general class, I know that beta blockers do cause fatigue. And they all of them do carry that side effect, but maybe one may, you know, work better for you than the other. So you can definitely explore that option. Now, when you were diagnosed, how long ago were you diagnosed with AFib?
It was 2 years ago in June, it triggered by I usually have a protein shake in the morning, and I'd had frozen fruit in, and it was in the banana I usually put in, and it happened to be frozen that day, and I took a big gulp, and why I took that much I don't know, but as soon as I swallowed it, my heart started racing, and for several hours it kept that up. I called my cardiologist's office, and the nurse was concerned, had me go into ER, and ended up in the hospital a couple of days. They ran a bunch of tests, but that's what, you know, it took them a while to get my heart rate down, and I was on the amiodarone IV.
Yeah.
Then when they gave me that to come home with, I also see Dr. Maiden, and
okay. He
said, I don't think your body likes that. I don't think you should be taking that, you know, orally, and I haven't, so I felt better. It just made me feel unstable, kind of.
Sure.
And so I haven't taken that. I'm just on the Eliquis and the metoprolol. But I just wondered, and then I did have one other episode last summer.
Okay.
And we think it was from caffeine, because I know I'm sensitive to caffeine, and I'd usually, if I'd had, you know, a glass of tea with a meal or something, I was okay, but I just had it alone in the afternoon because it was a hot day, and they think that's what triggered it, and I, you know, unless I have it and I don't know it, those are the only two episodes I really know that I've had.
Okay, so the drugs are basically doing their job. They're controlling the heart rate as much as you know. Certainly no symptomatic episodes for you, but they're causing side effects. And so the question is, what is the next step? So my suggestion would be talk to the cardiologist, see if you can change the beta blocker or change the dose. And then with the blood thinner, you know, you can explore the options of ablation or some other procedure, because that is, you can ask to see if, you know, you qualify or if you can try that. You can definitely come off of the drug with that. But overall, with this AFib, you know, your risk is higher. So it is probably safer to stay on the medication if they don't offer you anything else.
All right. Thank you, Jane. The music says, gotta take a break. We're going to do that, and we will be right back with Kathy in just a moment. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. Don't do it. I gave too many last chances. Oh, boy. Happily married now.
And, you know, the other thing, so they say, is never say never, right?
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, the girls in charge today. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat. We have time for one last call. Kathy from Des Moines. Good morning, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I heard you earlier on KTTH. I know you're on KBI now. But I thought, I'm calling that urinary tract infection.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I heard you say that you could have a urine test and you really not record that you have, like, the bacteria. And it was for an older lady.
Yeah.
I'm 65.
Yeah.
But I,
you know, what?
I have urinary tract infection, and my doctor couldn't find anything. And
yeah.
So
Yeah. So urinalysis, when we order the urinalysis, what we're looking for is any pus cells, is the white cell count elevated? And that basically gives us a clue to whether there is a urinary tract infection or not. But when we look for bacteria, we're actually looking in a blood sample as well. So we're looking for correlation between that. And in the blood test, we're also looking for an elevated white count along with other inflammation markers to be elevated, like a citrate or a high-sensitivity C-reactive protein. So we're looking for a few things to tell us if there is a bladder infection or not. Certainly the symptoms will guide it. If the patient comes in saying that they have pain with peeing, or that the color of the urine is cloudy, or if there's a smell or an odor, and that you know, kind of guides us to do that investigation to look for an infection. Do you have any other symptoms? Why do you think you have a UTI?
Or urgency, is that one of them?
Yes, it absolutely is. Pain, urgency, frequency, nighttime urination.
It's all of those. I've just been having a terrible time. I went to a gyno-urologist to try and figure out the urgency. They said I had stress incontinence. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have to pee often, so I kind of don't drink water enough. And then when I, it would burn if I went to pee. So I realized I have to drink a lot of water.
Right.
And it does in the morning, especially, it smells different, not in a good way. And I think it's cloudy as well.
Okay.
In the morning.
But they're not picking up any infection, so they're not giving you any antibiotics.
Well, she didn't really think, you know, I was in there mostly for stress incontinence, so she ran a sample. I drank a bunch of water before I went to see her so that I would have a lot of urine, right? And I think that was maybe a bad idea. I was thinking maybe I should go back and get a sample cup and take a sample at home from the morning.
You know what I can suggest for you? Why don't you try D-mannose? Have you tried D-mannose?
No, I have not.
Okay, so D-mannose is a sugar, and it just attaches to the bacteria, and it doesn't really increase your sugar level. And you can take – it's over-the-counter. You can either buy the powder or you can buy the capsules. Buy something high, like 750-milligram dose. Take it 2 to 3 times a day and see if it'll help clear your symptoms. If it is a bladder infection, it will help clear your symptoms.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And are there any over-the-counter pain things she can get, Dr. Umat, just to help her with the pain?
Well,
or is that mostly the doctor
mostly
has to prescribe?
Yeah, okay. Mostly prescription. But you can try the D-mannose. If the infection is causing the pain symptoms, they will improve. And have you tried, like, cranberry juice and things like that? Some people
lots of palm juice, but I don't like to drink that much juice.
Not from palm. For bladder, it's cranberry.
Cranberry, oh
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and the tarter it is, the better off you are.
Yeah, not cran raspberry or cran apple.
No,
it has to be
sugar.
Cranberry cocktail.
Yeah, yeah. Not a sugar. Try the real cranberry juice and try some D-mannose and see if that'll help relieve your symptoms. Yeah, easily available online, over the counter, no prescription needed. And if it is a bladder infection, it will actually help with your symptoms.
Okay, yeah. And the pain is only, it just burns a little, but I know how to stop that by just drinking more water.
Right. So. And then, you know, if the stress continence is maybe precipitating it, you might want to have that treated. Now, the Vitalia is basically a radio frequency treatment, and some GYNs also carry the machine in their offices. We have it at Bella Medica, and we can talk about it with you if you're interested. But first, I think, get the acute situation taken care of. And,
okay.
And then just manage the stress incontinence after that, okay?
Does that treatment in your facility hurt?
No.
Like the Vitalia?
No.
Is it painful when they do whatever?
No, it's not No, it's not painful.
No sound waves, right?
It's just a radio frequency treatment. It's not sound waves. It's radio frequency treatment. And it it basically feels warm. It's not painful, and there's no downtime. It's a 30-minute. We block 1 hour, but it's literally a 30-minute procedure. And after the treatment, you can go out and party.
Okay. That sounds great. Thank you so much for your help.
You are very welcome, and good luck to you.
Thank you for the call, Kathy.
I know this can be painful, right?
It's something. Yes. Yeah,
they're not finding anything. They don't want to treat you, but you're struggling, and I hear you. It's real. And then we didn't talk to her about age and hormone replacement therapy and so on, and frequency and stress. You know, there's so much you can do. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I like that you gave her something to start with to see that she could get over the counter.
Absolutely. Control the acute situation first, and then you can see what do you need to do to prevent propagation and what is the underlying cause, and so you don't keep getting recurrences.
Okay. Very good. Just a couple minutes left of our show today. Of course, Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Centers. If you aren't, we would love for you to become a patient here at Longevity. We've had several call-ins today. Love hearing their stories, especially when they say, I've been with you for 5 years, 10, 20, or from the very beginning. And that's what we want for you. We want your health to get better. We want you to be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier. That's what Dr. Mixon likes to say. Those are our goals for your life, no matter how old you are. If you're coming in at age 40, 50, 60, in your 70s, 80s, 90s even. We've treated people from all ages. The sooner you come in, the younger you are, the sooner you come in, even if you're feeling great, let's find out what is going on and what you could be at risk for and get you doing the right things with the right supplements, get those hormones balanced. Boy, I wish I would have known about that. Hormones 20 years ago. And so thankful for Longevity getting me to actually have hormones and produce my own. And I won't go any further than that. Okay. But I'm a walking little testament here that you will feel so much better. You will have more energy. You will sleep better, depending on whatever it is that you are dealing with and going through. Come check us out at Longevity Medical Clinics. You can do one of two things. Give us a call and say, hey, I want to sign up for that free health analysis appointment. You can do that by calling 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, pick a clinic. We have three, one in Linwood, Kirkland, and in Tacoma. And then you can pick the day and the time that works best for your schedule. That's lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. That's the show for this week. We will be back with you next week live in the studio, and we'll give you an update. We'll be video and audio very soon. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.